from the crypt.
Crypt. My name is Jason. Tonight, I'm joined by Jody.
Hello.
And Mondo.
Hey.
Hi. And tonight, we have an excellent guest coming to us. His name is Chris Dortch, and he is the founder and director of the Chattanooga Film Festival. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This is an honor. I've been a fan for, like, you know, for a long time listener, first time caller. So this is great.
Yeah, we've been trying to get you on for a while, so I'm glad you're finally here. And fortunately, of the three of us, I haven't met you or haven't been to the festival. Jody can't promise me I won't see any snakes on my trip. So
every time I talk to him about coming down here, he's afraid of Tennessee. Like, Tennessee scares him because of our snakes.
As long as you don't wander off through the forest, like, you're not going to see a snake.
Like, yeah, you're not like at the parking lot of like a Home Depot or something, but like, you know, they're around, you know, in the wooded area. The greenhouse
is actually, believe it or not, Jason, I've told you this before, there are paved streets here, and it's such a miracle. Like, you could walk down them, there's no nature on them.
Honestly, Jason, all the snakes in the Southeast are in the hands of churches, and they use them ritualistically. Right. So they're not just roaming around, they keep them in baskets. It's fun.
They got book learning and everything down there now, Jason. You
can definitely what we that. Learn on our own all the
we
time.
We even have shoes. We even have shoes, man. It's great. Yeah, don't.
When we're not burning them, apparently. Christ. Yeah. Oh, man, I definitely don't expect anyone to know, and I'm honestly very flattered that you gentlemen do. But we are a genre film festival that's been around. This will be our 11th year. And in those 11 years, we've figured out a formula that we think works pretty well. And in the last couple of years, we've been named one of the 25 coolest film festivals in the world by Movie Maker Magazine. People, I assume, know what they're talking about, and that can't be influenced by my mom and her sisters, that kind of thing. So we've also been lucky enough to have been named one of the best horror film festivals in the world a couple of years by the Dread Central folks. We're Fangoria approved, which is something that means a lot to me as a person who got detention for having an issue in my bag a time or two. So it's honestly been a joy to put this together. I have no other skill sets at all. I am a former video store kid. So after the documentary channel kind of went the way of the buffalo, I took a job at the Belcourt in Nashville, their art house, and really started to fall in love with programming movies there. And that has led me down this strange, dark path into the Southeast, where I'm making the Bible Belt just a little less Bible-y one year at a time. So
that should be the slogan.
There's still time to print the t-shirts for this year. So I'm going to write this down. Yeah.
Well, it's a very generic name, Chattanooga Film Festival, but it has such a genre bent to it.
I love it too. And the reason people ask me all the time why you didn't do, like, and again, there's a festival in town, and I'm gonna go ahead and dox them and say their name because I think it's fucking ridiculous. But they call themselves the Nooga Underground Film Festival. And as a native, I take great umbrage when anyone uses the term Nooga. I hate our city being called that. But, like, I think it's funny when festivals use, like, words like international or underground or things like that. And what I find is that even though I do love a lot of horror and a lot of genre stuff, I don't ever want to be painted into a corner because I don't know what a year is going to hold. Like, last year I had two rom-coms, and I hadn't had any in 4 years that I loved enough to program. A couple years before that, a college football themed set of slasher movies that were also set in the South. So it's like you kind of just got to play the cards you're dealt every year and try to carve out of that clay the best lineup of movies. And by being named Chattanooga, it means that I can do anything or go anywhere. It's not like, you know, a name like Cinepocalypse used to be. Like, you kind of know what you're signing up there for a little bit. And here, I don't necessarily want you to know. In fact, like, the secret screening thing is a big part of it. So, the formula is going okay so far.
That's one of the things I love about attending is you genuinely do not know what you're going to get when you look at these movies. Like, I have no idea. And sometimes you get these like awesome surprises. The night that we saw last year, I was down there with Mondo and a friend of mine who's coming with me again this year.
Joe, we can name him. He's been the podcast. Joe Ferry of the film.
Joe Ferry, our friend Joe.
Awesome.
But we didn't really have any plans for the evening, and we saw that Molly and Max in the Future was playing, and we're like,
I'm so glad you watched
it. Sure, yeah. whatever this movie is. It was delightful. It was one of my favorite movies of the whole thing. So nice.
Charming, completely charming. And also like the kind of thing that I want there for people as a palate cleanser compared, you know, with all the other stuff. So,
but I think that same night or maybe the next night we saw Pound Cake at the same, in the same theater.
Bless you for watching Pound Cake. That was CFF on difficult mode there, and you made it. So yeah,
it was only like 10 of us for that one, but man.
And then you have stuff like was it Pienaar? Is that how you say that one?
Pienaar.
Yeah, where he grows a horse's tail and it's like half body horror, half like a little bit of like Duke of Burgundy or like one of those Peter Strickland movies that just have such an incredible like art house sensibility to them, even while the most Cronenberg-y shit starts to happen. Really love that movie. I'm so glad you brought it up because very few people gave that a chance too. And that's like perhaps one of my favorite things we did last year.
We were on the How Not to Make a Movie podcast because Gil and Al, I think Al Katz said that was his favorite movie of the festival.
He came up to me twice about it. And the thing was, is it wasn't like he'd forgotten. He told me the second time. It was like, I want to continue our earlier discussion about Pia. It's great. And I thought that was wonderful. That made me love him all the more.
And my other favorites, I love Lola, which
thank you for watching Lola. That's another one. That's so good. Just finally got a physical release from some people who care about it. I love that movie. Yeah. Really want more people to take a chance on it.
And then my favorite movie of the whole thing wasn't horror. It was the last movie ever made.
God, what an absolutely charming, heart-wrenching, like if you've ever loved movies or wanted to create something in your life, we have a film like that this year that I got to put on your radar right now. I think we've announced it already, but if we have it, fuck it. It's one of the many scoops I will give you because I'm terrible at secrets. But it's a movie called Flipside, and it's half about a guy that's trying to buy his childhood record store that, you know, he got obsessed with music. But the other half of it is it shows you all his failed previous documentary projects. And there's just multiple aborted projects that are woven into the framework of this movie. And it really becomes something about like how much joy there is in creating something, but how fucking difficult it is. And it's like, it feels like a midlife crisis caught on film. And I just absolutely love it. It's called Flipside, and we're doing it this year. So
I just picked up a steel book of One Cut of the Dead today. So movies about making movies that inspire me to want to make a movie are some of my favorites.
That movie had a tearful standing ovation when we showed it, legitimately. Yeah. Like that's like the Cinema Paradiso for a certain type of human being. And I am definitely that type of human being. So I'm glad you brought that up.
We're talking about the day I did not like that movie, but I also realized that I might not have been in the right headspace when I watched it.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, there are some movies where I'll watch, I'm like, I really didn't love that, but I need to watch that again and give it another chance.
I couldn't agree with you more about that phenomenon because it's like, okay, we're in the middle of film programming right now. And this year we got over 700 films sent our way, which is a record for us.
That's awesome.
And it's awesome. But what I find is that it's kind of like Russian roulette. I don't ever know what subject matter I'm getting myself into because I watch everything in the order it comes in. So I have literally seen a number of like, I got a good couple of anti-vax zombie movies sent to me this year. Like some, you know, quite a number of like very heavy abortion docs and things like that. So it's like never like, I find that if I watch something in a bad mood, then I feel like I'm doing the filmmaker a disservice. And so I've started using things like Tremors, for example, as a palate cleanser that it just puts me in such a good spot that I feel like I can go back and like be kind to someone's art again. But I know what you mean. Like there's tons of stuff that I've wondered if I really liked it or hated it or if I've just been in a shitty mood that day. So
yeah, I definitely have a lot of old movies like that too. And then I'll watch it again. Like, why did I not love this movie?
Like, I love it. I was having a bad week.
Was made for me, and I just wasn't on it that time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, since Mondo got to talk about his favorite from last year, I have to tell my favorite too, just because it's fun to talk about stuff. Trim Season is the one that I can't wait to get the release in a couple months.
I'm going to give you another fun scoop here that this is coming out on the 16th with our final wave. Ariel, who directed Trim Season, is a good friend of our festival, and her very first film, which is a movie about the band Lord Huron called Vida Nor, did a secret screening premiere a few years back. She let us do it before anybody did, and it was really special. And that made us want to bring her back for Trim Season because we just adore her as a human being. Yeah. And for the last literally probably 20 years, she has been making a movie that for a while she lived in her car to get this thing done. It's basically like a one-woman show. She did the set design. She did the special effects. She wrote it. She shot it. She edited it. She's editing it right now. And we're world premiering it this year.
That's incredible.
It's called Sleep, Wake, Forget. It's fantastic. And she's just another voice that I think is just her background as a production designer on all the Benson and Moorhead stuff just means she can nail atmosphere for like 10 bucks. And
Trim,
she
Trim
just
Season was a beautiful, I mean, it was a horror movie so and nasty, but it was beautiful too.
You know, like weed horror as a subgenre, like that's like a banquet for us. It's usually like evil bong that we're getting, right. So it's like, I applaud that. Yeah.
It was weed horror, but weed was just the background. It wasn't
It's the MacGuffin. Yeah. It's not the entire crux of the movie. Yes.
Yeah. Which I really liked. So for all of our fans out there so going to Chattanooga is the best experience. I had the best experience there. The hotel you guys have this at is phenomenal. I
love it so much.
I had such a good time out there. This year I won't be able to make it because my dumb friend who I love dearly, who I would die for, decided to get married on that Sunday.
That's completely valid.
I asked him to move the wedding. He said no. So I did try. Tell us how can we watch this virtually though? We can't make it down there.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked that question because we are still one of the only festivals. There's a couple of folks the folks at Panic Fest. I applaud them for keeping it rolling. And also the other thing about that is I feel like when virtual has been a thing that festivals have done, it's kind of maybe an afterthought, like, hey, we can make a few more bucks. We can sell a few more tickets. To me, since you've experienced it virtually with us before, it can't feel like an afterthought. It has to feel like this natural extension of the festival. And by having it on the day, it runs the whole time, but having it really pick up the days after the in-person happen means we can focus on it and start doing things like these watch parties every night. Yeah. And, you know, we have this Discord channel, of course, where every filmmaker gets their own channel, and it just turns the whole thing into like a 24-hour Q&A session and kind of a little love in, and that's become a huge part of it. And that's very much a part of this year too. And to give you a fun little number for the virtual side of things, you can get a ticket for it at chatfilmfest.org if you'd like to support the festival and pick up a whole badge. If you don't want to pick up a whole badge, this year we've been able to get the rights to do single tickets for absolutely
that's
everything.
Cool.
So it's also like, I am just such a, I'm a completely broke person perpetually. Like I decided like my life would be me sleeping on people's couches to do this festival. So it kind of feels like, you know, running a festival, like a punk rock band to some extent, but I just try to keep our prices as low as I can and make sure that even if somebody's only got a few bucks in their pocket, they can come out and be a part of this thing. And there's also a free thing happening this year that you will still virtually get to take part in, which is a big salute we're doing to our friend Jeff Burr, who passed away recently. When Jeff passed away, another good friend of ours, his longtime line producer Mark Hanna, was cleaning out Jeff's house and found his personal copy of the Leatherface work print with a lot of what New Line cut out of it. And we're getting to show it for free as a tribute. And that event is like open to the public. So we're hoping, just like with the Monster Squad kickoff with Andre last year, that there's at least one thing that, you know, Monster Kids can come to for free if they don't have too many shekels floating around.
That's awesome. And you know, for some people, we just might not have time. They might not be able to have a time. 100%
traveling, booking, you know, having a family. I just feel like accessibility means a lot of things to a lot of people. It's not just, you know, folks who are disabled and can't have the experience. It's people who are economically unable to do this. And the number of emails we get every year since this started from people thanking us that the word they always use was attended a film festival. they feel like they attended it. They feel like they were there and that they made friends. And I feel like it's honestly something that I'd be a fool not to keep that part of it going. So I'm glad to hear that you'll be benefiting it from it directly this year. Like I know there's others like you out there, and we're going to keep rolling that way too.
Yeah, the first year it was Jody that kind of put it on my radar. The first year you guys went virtual for the pandemic. And I can't tell you how good of a time I had, and especially during the pandemic in a very dark time in our history. It was really so much fun to watch all these genre movies and then the Discord. They said the Discord chat. And like last year when you showed Necronomicon as a secret screening, and I'm watching this movie that I have on VHS still that I absolutely love.
I have that same one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we talked about it.
Yeah.
I'm seeing people just chime in, and it's kind of one of those cool things when you love one of those a movie like that, and other people are now watching it for the first time and expressing their love. It's just a warm and fuzzy feeling.
You're right. You feel like they're Sherpa. You're like, guys, yeah. I'm getting us through this mountain. You know, like I absolutely love that feeling.
I love sharing movies with people. However you can, like for
it's literally the reason I'm alive at this point.
For years,
pretty much.
I've been doing a Halloween movie fest where it's a virtual fest. It's the same kind of thing. We program.
That's awesome.
I pick a bunch of movies from streaming services, and we all watch and discuss and do watch part. Just because I love telling people, I saw something cool. Now you can see it, and then we get to see it together, and it's awesome. I love doing that.
The only time that backfired is when Jody and I were hyping up Bloodsucking Freaks.
Yeah. I love Bloodsucking Freaks much, honestly. I really do. I found that movie at the right time in my life. It's kind of grandfathered in, even though present day me is like, ooh, don't show this to that many people. But
There was a time in college that I...
Go ahead. And Jody and I were like, this movie's awesome. And everyone's like,
I mean, we do the Patreon every month too to keep the virtual screenings rolling, and have the Double Secret Cinema Society we started during it. And I've honestly felt like I've done a pretty good job picking the random month-to-month choices. But a couple of months ago for February, I chose Heartbeats, the completely failed Andy Kaufman, Bernadette Peters' Androids romance. And I was like, this is going to charm their socks off. And, you know, I think socks came off, but they were being loaded with quarters.
There was a lot of us, though, that were like, you know, this movie is better. I've only known this movie by reputation, and it's better than I expected.
I didn't get a chance to catch it, but what I love, again, also about Chattanooga Film Festival is seeing things I probably might not discover on my own if I 100%. Didn't. And also, other thing I'll say too is a lot of people are afraid of short films. I'll say,
and I agree.
When you see them, the way you guys curate them and have different blocks for them, it really kind of brings emphasis on those films because it's such a great mix, and each block is themed, so you know what you're getting when you walk in. And the shorts have become like one of my favorite parts of the whole festival.
Man, I'm happy to tell you they doubled this year. That's 85. We have three new blocks. That Fun Size Epics block where we got to do shorts that were 15 minutes and above was just a banger of a hit for us last year. So there's two volumes of that now because we're starting to see a trend up, you know, 20 to 30 minute short films. And when you're talking about building a block on the ground that's only 2 hours, it's really tough to let one movie be the centerpiece of that whole block unless it's just something really special. So that's really like, that's another area where over and above the accessibility, I wouldn't have those slots to play with at all if I were just on the ground. I'd be full and regretting all the things I couldn't find a way to cram in. And I've got you covered on shorts this year. I think you're going to be overjoyed.
Well, for anyone who decides to go this year, whether virtually or in person, it's a full week. You like from the moment that it starts until it's over, you get content, movies, shorts, discussions online. It's great. I look forward to it. It's my vacation.
That's so great to hear. At a bar, at a brewery, like it was so cool.
Man, doing stuff like that is just the kind of the bread and butter of this thing, truly. So
for any of our listeners out there, I think we've lost Jason. Just to let you guys know, Jason.
Are we flying
gone.
Solo tonight?
Look at me. I am Jason now. I pulled up the episode. We're just going to roll with this. This might be train wreck city, folks. But if you like it, we'll just kick Jason off the show and we'll just
go. That's right. This is audition. This is on full time.
You're writing the hits for your solo albums right now, gentlemen. Don't let this be like when Kiss did it. Yeah. So.
Now that Jason's dropped off, my anxiety is through the roof. Now we have two Jasons on the screen, but this is gonna be great. Great radio content.
Jason is the glue that holds us together.
Can you hear me?
He's the glue.
I was trying to talk for like 15 minutes, and then we've stopped.
No, he's frozen again. Yes, we can hear you. So
let's go ahead and get. Jason, take a seat.
I was going to ask, what's the headline for 2024?
Let's go ahead and get into the film itself.
What's the big theme?
I'm glad you asked that, because one of the most rewarding things I've gotten to do, period, putting this festival together. And the last couple of years, we've started to embrace more, you know, classic TV. Mm-hmm. Things like we did Tales from the Crypt, obviously, last year. Yeah, thank you for repping the merch there. I think you'll like what this year's turned out like, too. But that was just such a great experience. And talking to Alan Gill and getting to hear all these great Hollywood stories and do that sort of a thing. For years, a good friend of our festival is a film historian named Mark Dowidziak. And Mark's a guy my dad's known since the 1980s, working at a newspaper in Kingsport, Tennessee. Wow. And Mark happens to be the first journalist anywhere in the world who wrote a story about Evil Dead with Sam Raimi. And Mark has devoted his life to not only writing these books about, you know, kind of very niche pop culture for genre fans. Like, a great example is he has what I think is the definitive book about Kolchak the Night Stalker, the entire series. It's really well done. But he's also such a historian that he's now, like, for example, if you were to walk into Barnes & Noble, his book, A Life and the Death of Edgar Allan Poe, it's called A Mystery of Mysteries is the actual title, and A Death in the Life of Edgar Allan Poe is the subtitle. But this is a dude that just knows so much about Poe also that we found cool ways to plug him in into two different things this year. One of which is a full ass salute to the Twilight Zone, something that has meant something to both my dad and I our entire lives. And, you know, even as we started to go through the submissions this year, the DNA of it is alive and well in so much genre cinema. It's there in sci-fi. It's there in horror. It's even in some of the melodramas that we took a look at. And I just, through Mark and Dad, had a chance to reach out to Anne Serling, who's Rod's, you know, daughter. And Anne wrote this incredible book about growing up with her dad. And we had one conversation with Anne and Mark Dowidziak, and it was just, there kind of wasn't a dry eye in the house, because it's like we started to hear stories about what her dad's sense of humor was like and hear his laugh and these things. You know, you see a very stoic, cigarette smoking, always Rod come on in his tailored suit and tell you the dimension you're about to enter for the night. But to see what a kind, cool dude he was and what an incredible lady he raised in Anne and his other daughters, it's just, it kind of unlocks the magic of what was not just great about the Twilight Zone, but what was so cool about Rod as a human. And I've started to learn things like Rod's the reason why the words Vietnam were uttered on American TV in the 60s for the first time. He got away with some shit in his day and was, you know, on the right side of history and about so many things and so far ahead of his time. And so putting that salute together has been a joy. That spiraled into, because Mark is not only like Dowidziak is this incredible Poe historian too, but also performs as Poe and does some very cool readings as Poe that are just like otherworldly to witness. And we're doing with him a thing that we're stupidly calling Poe Things, an Edgar Allan Show. And what that is that gives us a chance to let Mark strut his stuff with his incredible ability as like a raconteur for what he can do with classic Poe. Gives me an excuse to do a secret screening of one of my favorite Corman Poe adaptations, which I'll just go ahead and tell you is The Pit and the Pendulum. I think it's fantastic. But there's also a Twilight Zone tie because Richard Matheson wrote the screenplay. So it kind of gave us this nice full circle thing. And so Mark's letting us do that. And we're also getting to throw a 100th anniversary or 100th birthday party, rather, for Rod Serling, because this year he would have been 100. And so having his daughter slicing the birthday cake at that shindig, it just feels like, you know, if nothing else, like I see if that feels like it's on the path right now. What the fuck that path means, I don't know, but it feels like we're doing what we're supposed to do. So
man, I am super even more jealous now, because last year, the one I loved everything, but the thing that surprised me the most was the Clay McLeod reading.
Man, yes. Clay is you understand now, like, that's a tradition. And like, we have a lot of author events this year. There's like a number of book signings and really terrific people like Izzy Lee, Benjamin Percy, the comic book writer, a ton of great people coming this year. But Clay is on day one. That, like, getting a dose of that on opening night, man, is just like a tone set. Like, you're in a haunted hotel with one of the scariest motherfuckers in the world, and he's not afraid to give you a lap dance while he reads a fucking story to you. It's, and in fact, like, I had found out about a few other festivals doing Clay's pumpkin pie show, but doing it in very much like what felt like a champagne room kind of a, you could go get a one or two person one-on-one story with Clay. Yeah. And I'm sorry to tell you, Clay is my friend. I love him. I am way too scared to let Clay tell me a one-on-one story. And so I think like that old school, like, I know we're all fans of The Fog here. That Hal Holbrook, you know, around the fucking, or, you know, the great fire campfire scene where you get the history of Antonia Bay and the curse. And I just love the idea of classic live ghost storytelling, and getting to do that in a haunted hotel just feels like checking off another thing from the bingo card. And that, you know, I try to Willy Wonka this thing together every year, and it's very rare that what comes out the other end looks like how it looks in my head. And the Reed House and people like Clay have allowed that to get just a little closer to fruition, for sure.
The good thing is, this is my last really important person in my life that's probably going to get married. So, and so next year,
I'll there just, you go.
Yeah. So next year, I definitely going next year.
Semi-obligated to go to the baby showers. Yeah.
She's not getting married in the next year, brother. Like, it's cool.
You got a little time.
Yeah. And if she does, I'm gonna tell her you can't do it in June. Like, you just have
to. Yeah. I'll tell you what, the Reed House is a lovely. There's a multiple ballrooms and banquets. We'll combine the dates. It'll be
We're gonna do the Dads from the Crypt wedding episode. Yeah.
Get a few more guests in formal attire. I'm okay with it.
Realistically, though, we live in Vegas. No one wants to get married in June in Las Vegas when it's 120 fucking degrees outside. Like, do you want your wedding dress and your tuxedo to stick to you?
No. Do you enjoy desert?
We keep losing Jason here.
Let's just go. Let's go ahead.
Yeah, let's go on with it. Tonight, I'm Jason now. Look at me. I'm Jason.
I blame my own house's Wi-Fi still. I refuse to believe it's Jason's fault. It's somehow what my shit is doing here. So
I know it's not mine because I'm hardwired. I hardwire it, except for one time it was me because I forgot to change my IP address and I had a static IP address for work. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, why? I'm getting so angry. Like, why is everybody dropping off? I'm like, oh.
I was literally having that problem 5 minutes ago and went, oh, my VPN is still running and I'm in somewhere in Europe right now. I need to turn this off and get back to functioning.
Let's talk about why. Why do you have a VPN, Jody?
It's just one of those things that's helpful to have. Okay. You know, the internet's a weird place.
So let's go and get started. Our tonight we're talking Creepshow Season 1, Episode 4. This aired on October 17th, 2019. And Jody, why don't you talk about The Companion, the first story in this.
All right, so we have two stories as usual, and the first one is The Companion. And this one's set in the late 80s, sometime probably, you know, 87, 88, something like that. And there's a little boy, or a young boy, what do you think, 16? 15?
Young, I'd say early high 15. School.
Yeah. Not old enough to have his driver's license and get away from that toxic
pretty,
ass.
Still pretty
brother.
Young. Yeah. But anyway, this boy, his name's Harold. Friends call him Harry. And he's fleeing from his brother, Billy, because Billy is a complete piece of crap. He tortures his brother. Like, there are X marks on his neck where he's cut him with a knife. We're not talking just bully. We're talking like Stephen King bully, you know. Where
he's not noogieing. He's notching, right. You know. So,
and so
his brother's basically Kiefer Sutherland from Stand By Me. Just think
about 100%.
So at one point, Harold's hanging down by the river and his friend shows up to check on him because he saw his bike there. And at first I thought, this is called the companion, and his friend shows up and I'm like, oh, so is it going to be about this friend like being a problem? But no, this friend was the coolest dude ever. Like, he was the nerdiest dude, but also the coolest guy. So I love this kid.
Absolutely, man. That kid's amazing. Also, like, shout out to the Jimmy who's a dead fuck Friday the 13th part 4 graffiti that's hanging in the background. Love that very much. But yeah, that kid's great. He just like busts out the lunchbox and the comic books, hey, and just offers some solidarity and he's out.
Yeah, I think he brought comic books, a porn magazine, and like a bunch of candy bars. Like, there you go, man. This is your care package. Your brother's bothering
told
you.
It'd be like, don't eat all the peanut butter cups, but otherwise we're cool, brother. You know, like, love it.
And when they talk to him, like, hey, all right, see you later, fucker. Like,
exactly. Yeah, those kids exchanging fuck for a couple of minutes really took me back in a very warm and nostalgic way.
It's funny because you could tell I won't say they're uncomfortable with the script, but it's not something they normally say. But I think that made it all the more endearing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It feels like they feel like they're doing something wrong and you can feel it back there. It's great. It was
fun. So wait, after the friend leaves, Billy finds Harold and goes after him just from the get-go, trying to like get on top of him, beat him up, hit him. And Harold manages to get away from him and finds this abandoned old farmhouse with a scarecrow out front. And so he looking for a weapon, he grabs this cane that's shoved into the middle of the scarecrow and grabs it so he's got something to protect himself. And this is where he goes into the house and we learn the history behind the scarecrow. There was a man who used to live there, a lonely farmer. His wife died and he was looking for some kind of companion to have. And he's an old man, so he makes this scarecrow. And he makes it out of various things around the house, but also some weird bones that he found. And then he gives it a heart that's a Valentine's Day heart that his wife made for him. So there's all of this emotion endued into this companion. And so the companion comes to life and he lives with a companion on the farm, and you know, things are okay for a while until a Girl Scout comes and she's coming to sell cookies, and the companion, the scarecrow, kills her. And
no thin mints, apparently. Yeah, she was out. And
understandable about the thin mints, but
but
so then the farmer, he's racked by grief. This thing he created killed this girl. And so he takes his cane, shoves it into the center of its chest, which puts it into like a suspended animation kind of situation, and leaves it up there on the whatever you call the thing you put a scarecrow on, a post or whatever. I don't know what you call it. I'm
in agreement. It's a post.
It's a post. It's a stick.
He basically crucified that. It's fine though.
Sure. And then he goes
3 days later.
Okay. He goes into the basement, writes this letter, and then commits suicide. And so, since Harold has pulled the cane out of the middle of the scarecrow then comes back to life. And we find out Billy has the cane in his hand, and the scarecrow comes after him, or not Billy. Harold has the cane in his hand. He comes after him, and the scarecrow sees the cane, kind of shrinks back away from it. He has some power over him when he has this cane in his hand. And so Harold stops him by shoving it back into his heart, and it puts him back in that suspended animation state. And then he gets an idea. And we end with Billy getting to meet our scarecrow friend as he brings the scarecrow home and gets rid of his tormentor by unleashing the scarecrow on him. That's it.
It seemed like he short sheeted his bed before he fucking, he was trapped in the short sheet. Like, ah, man, that was like a double burn there. So, you know,
it was a complicated, like, I mean, he literally was like sewn down on both sides. His brother is a heavy sleeper.
He was not moving.
So the real question is, was that a farmer guy? Was he fucking that scarecrow?
It's called The Companion, and it's written by Joe Lansdale, the story. And Joe Lansdale would not be a gentleman opposed to some scarecrow fucking. So you bring up a great point.
It's not explicit, but it could be.
It's fine.
I mean, I feel like that if that scarecrow would have some odd holes cut in it in odd places.
That broke back Gunny Sack Mountain, you know? It's fine.
And I wish Harry would have just been like, huh. Yeah. Why is that there? That's odd.
Jason Deere disappeared again and came back to this discussion. Next point.
I leave you guys alone for 1 minute and you're talking about Scarecrow. Fuck.
Yeah, it's my fault, I think.
I got this, Jason. You can just go away. It's fine. Chris, you're our guest. Why don't you start us off and tell us what you think about this episode?
Man, this I gotta say, obviously we talked about pre the episode a little bit how much I've loved watching David Bruckner's career grow and just all the great stuff that we're getting from him lately. I love The Night House. I think The Night House has like one of the best executed jump scares in the last 10 years. And when a movie can do that to me that well, I feel like I'm in the hands of somebody that I don't totally feel safe with. Ooh. And I love that. And I really had a lot of fun with his take on Hellraiser 2. I am admittedly biased because Joss and Sierra Russell, the incredibly talented effects artists that created the Cenobites, are like multi-time CFF alumni. And it was so cool getting them get to do something which I knew was a dream for them. But so there's the other side of it where, like, for full disclosure, one of the very first pop-up screenings I did when I moved back to Chattanooga, when I was still in every bar, restaurant, warehouse, abandoned building that where the electricity would work that would have me, was Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. And nice. I am such a fan of the trope of the evil scarecrow. I even like some of The Messengers isn't a great movie, but it has a great, fun, you know, evil scarecrow thing in it. I like the movie Scarecrows. I love the fact that we have a character named Harold here, a clear reference to Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark's iconic scarecrow story. So this was like kind of one that was ready made for me, and I just had a blast with it, honestly.
That's awesome. Jody.
Yeah.
What'd you think of
that? Yeah, I think this is an excellent little short story. It's got the feel of that classic, like, Tales from the Crypties type. I mean, this is definitely a Creepshow story.
Like, 100%. Yeah. Feels like it through and through.
It reminded me of that, what was it, Four-Sided Triangle with Erica Liniak,
when she's in love with the 100%.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of, yeah.
Yeah, there's even, like, shades of Pumpkinhead in here, which is another movie I love. Yeah,
Pumpkinhead, like, it was one of the things when you were talking
about this creature. And
I mean, even like the keep, like the idea of the golem, you know, like I love all that.
The creature design was great. It was a really cool monster. It had all these like vines that were like tentacly and they would come out and grab a hold of things. And I like the relationship between the man and the scarecrow, and then finally Harold and the scarecrow, how he kind of he almost makes his peace with the scarecrow because he realizes he can get out of this situation with Billy, his terrible older brother. I loved it. I thought it was just for people who love Tales from the Crypt and Creepshow and things like this. This is a classic straight down the middle type story done really, really well. I really loved it.
Jason, are you there? Do you want to chime in? Jason is apparently dead, so we're just going to go ahead.
This was the day of the eclipse. Jason somehow has been raptured as a Jewish person. I don't understand any of it.
Spin all of this into your own Beatles-esque. Jason is dead. You got to get the backward masking going. He's not wearing shoes in the next album cover, whatever. Yeah, there's room for it.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and I'm with you guys on this. I thought that was a really fun episode. I love scarecrow aesthetics. Mm-hmm. I just think it's such a really cool. I don't think there's ever been a bad scarecrow monster in a movie. Like, it's not always cool. Always creepy. Yeah. And it's kind of cool when you see the farmer when he's creating the scarecrow and he's doing it out of grief and out of love, and it's almost heartbreaking when he has to kill it because you can tell he's doing it. Mm-hmm. For the greater good, but he doesn't.
Right, they've been playing chess and sipping iced tea for weeks, and now he's got a turn on it. So
yes, so that was kind of a little bit heartbreaking. I thought I love the dialogue between the kid actors. They seemed like real friends.
Yeah,
and that was kind of cool. And overall, I thought it was a really great story mashed down into 20 minutes that was easily palatable and an easy watch and a fun watch.
This is what I'm going to revisit for sure. Like, I want to watch this with my kids now. They weren't with me when I watched this. They need to. It's really cool.
I've made like
you it. Mentioning those kids too, and their seeming friendship. Like, maybe it's just because they're down by the water and, you know, on the run from bullies. But one of the things that I loved about the It miniseries that it nailed so well when I first saw it was all those early scenes where they meet Richie and they're making the dam and all that. And I couldn't help but feel a little bit of that DNA in there too. And I just love that.
You definitely felt for the main character. Like you definitely could see his pain. And it's, I think it's important. If the main character is going to live, you need to make him someone that people can relate to and people want to see succeed and want to see.
Right. You got to root for him. Sure. Yeah.
Like even at the end, like, yeah, maybe he killed his brother. But you know what? The guy kind of deserved it. You know.
Do we feel bad for the brother? Because I don't.
No, not at all. Jason has risen from the dead. It is post Easter, so
he has risen.
He died, and then 3 segments later, he came back.
Turns out, Casberry eggs can be used for resurrection. Who knew?
All right, can you see me? And can you hear?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yes, sir.
What do you think of this? Of this segment.
Yeah, I have no clue what anyone else said, but yeah, I love this episode. I love the... Am I gone again?
No, you're good. You're good.
You're good.
Keep talking.
Just keep talking. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, I love that Scarecrow costume was fucking amazing.
Yes.
I love the acting.
Some Razorback in there a little bit.
I loved... It was very Stephen King-esque. The bad bullies, the kid under the bridge.
Jason,
we know that. The box of whatever.
I'll take Jason's duties here. I've got it all pulled up.
And everything else.
Let's talk about who made this thing. David Bruckner is the director. We've already mentioned that.
My Nights.
And if you don't know him, he did The Signal. He did The Ritual, Night House, Hellraiser, Southbound, parts of VHS. He's just one of these guys that cannot miss. Everything he's made is very good. So,
and The Blob. He did The Blob remake.
Oh, The Blob remake. Yes.
Yeah.
So we've also got Logan Allen plays Harold. He's plays something in Stranger Things. I didn't recognize the character name, but I thought he was great. I thought he was really good in this role.
Me too.
He played a kid really well, like a realistic kid, but also all this trauma from his terrible older brother. Like I feel like he's did a great job with it.
And it hangs on his shoulders too. It's like if you watch something like Antlers where a similar thing happens, you're kind of seeing that through the teacher's perspective, seeing that this kid's going through the tough thing, not starting with the tough kid thing. And I thought that was cool for sure.
Smitty is his friend, whose name I couldn't remember. So that's Smitty. He played by.
I love that there's a Smitty, by the way. You don't get one all the time.
You basically had one in Peter Pan, and that's it. Peter Pan and Creepshow episode one season.
Creepshow Smitty and Peter Pan Smitty.
His name is Dylan Gage, and he's been in Shining Vale, Pin 15, which is a great series.
Oh, really is.
Fear Street Part 2, that whole series was great. And again,
I had a blast with those. Yeah.
And then finally, we got Billy. His real name is Voltaire Colin Council. I don't know what else he's been in. Jason doesn't have anything listed, so it must not be anything we know. But that is a hell of a name. Voltaire Colin Council. Impressive, honestly.
I'm trying to look up his IMDb, and he's got some stuff on here. Nothing I can. Yeah. The time capsule.
Oh, Uncle and the old man who made the Scarecrow. His name is Brenner in the show, played by Alfimo Omalami. He was in Glory and Forrest Gump. Remember the Titans, True Detective season 2. This is great stuff. He's got a great resume.
He has a great voice. He had a great voice when he's doing the voiceover. Like the first time I heard his voice, I actually thought it was Tony Todd for a second. I'm like, I don't remember Tony Todd being in this. Because they both have such a good, deep, like bassy, just soothing voices.
Yeah, I watched The Thing with my kids last night. And afterwards, I had to show them. I'm like, so you remember Childs? He's one of the greatest voice actors. You've heard him your entire childhood. You just don't even know it.
Yep.
Afterwards, did you show them Requiem for a Dream and Keith David's in that?
We did not. That's not a family movie night that we tried.
That'd be your last
Aronofsky somewhere like, really? Yeah. Like,
I wrote that for families.
The only thing in pie is just the drill in the head. Otherwise, the kids, they love it. So,
Jody, why don't you talk to us about the second segment in this, Lydia Lane's Better Half.
All right. So, Lydia Lane's Better Half. We start with Lydia Lane, Trisha Helfer from Battlestar Galactica. Just incredible every time she shows up. She was at CFF last year.
I was just going to say, that was one of those things where it was Mark Bernardin, who, awesome dude, fan of his for a long time, incredible, like, learned about so much comic books and so many things that I love from that dude. And Mark submitted a film called Splinter that happened to be produced by some other alumni filmmakers. So it was just an absolute no-brainer. And the night his block was about to, he was like, you care if Trisha Heffler comes and hangs out? And I was like, yes. So she just kind of showed up and hung around and was just really charming and watched a bunch of stuff. And I that's like my preferred celebrity signing. Yeah. Like I'd much rather that happen than, you know, be charging people for autographs like it was a convention or something.
So, yeah, no, I was sitting there watching something and I turned my head and I'm like, wait a second. Holy cow, that's Trisha Helfer right there. So anyway, she's the lead in this, Lydia Lane. And she is the owner of a powerful, large company. It's one of those companies that I have no idea what they do because it's just big finance stuff that I will never be anywhere near. But
same.
Yeah, I don't know nothing about this.
Board meetings.
Board meetings, yeah. So there are two people up for the position of CFO, and she gives it to the guy. And we find out afterwards that the woman who was up for it was also her lover, and she is very mad that she did not get the CFO position. And so they get into an argument about it, and Lydia accidentally kills her by pushing her over the back of the couch, and a pointy trophy goes straight into her head. One thing I've learned from horror, if anyone ever gives me a pointy trophy, I'm putting it up in a closet somewhere because people die on those things constantly.
A horror version of like Chekhov shotgun, where if you know it, like in the first, you're like, oh shit, if there is like any human achievement awards in this room with a particularly sharp spire on top.
Yeah.
Well, they'd always do it in Lucio Fulci too. They just give you a quick shot of the nail in the wall. I'm like, oh, someone's eye's getting put on that motherfucker. Like,
there's an eye on that shit. Yeah. In less than 30 seconds, I got cash on it.
So at this point, this could have been over if she just called somebody and was like, a terrible accident happened, please help. But she didn't, because it's a movie and it's more entertaining to go this way. She tries to hide the corpse and she puts it into a office chair and rolls her around and manages to get her into the elevator. And then halfway down the elevator, earlier in the segment, we had seen a small earthquake take place and everyone's very nonchalant about it. You know, it's California. But this time another earthquake happens and it actually makes the power go out while they're trapped in this elevator. And so they've been there for hours. And after a while, Lydia starts to believe that Celia is glaring at her and starting to move on her own. So she keeps trying to make escapes. Finally, she manages to pry the door open enough that she could crawl out through the top. And she does the craziest way of getting out. I've never seen anyone like go feet first through a hole that high in the air. You got to go head first. It's a crazy way to get out of a hole. But she goes feet first and is pulling herself through with just her head left behind. And at that point, Celia's dead body reaches up and grabs her head. The elevator starts moving, decapitating her. And we end on the elevator opening and everyone finding Celia's dead body cradling the head of Lydia. And a smile on her face.
Jody, you told me to cut this if you want me to cut this. But I don't know how much you know about coming out of holes since you have 7 children.
I'm 6, first off. Let's clarify this. I do have many, many children, but there are not. I'm not taking any extras, okay? I want to keep the number I have.
I was pretty proud of that. I'm like,
that's nice. I appreciate that.
Do not let your wife hear that.
Why am I being like, that award has got your name on it and it's still in the back of her head and you're going to get rid of the body. You're going to take that part out, right? Because otherwise that's basically your business card. Yeah. So
I'm going to get,
I mean, this is one of those horror stories that absolutely could be like solved with a phone call early on. Like someone should have gone, oh shit, an accident happened, called, you know, paramedics and stuff. It would have been a whole thing, but you wouldn't have been trapped on an elevator with a living corpse. So
it's like why Keanu doesn't shoot the tires out when he's running alongside the bus at the ending of Speed, right, or the beginning of Speed. He knows he could have.
Man, we've done 138 episodes now, and I think that is the first reference to speed.
Hey, that won't be the only one if you ever have me back. We can go cruise control if you want.
Yeah, you know what? For as much as speed gets panned, the line when he goes, "I'm smarter than you, Jack," and Keanu Reeves fucking knocks his head off, and he goes, "Yeah, well, I'm taller. Fucking beautiful masterpiece of cinema. Like,
doesn't take much more than that to excite this fella. And if it ever stops, I'm just going to know that's when it's time to hang up the film festival game. Well, my heart's died, everyone.
This is why you're our people.
Yeah, even the "ain't it cool" line from Broken Arrow just not doing it for me anymore.
Could you please not shoot at the thermonuclear weapons?
Such 100%.
That kind of deadpan humor is like my favorite.
Oh, it's so great.
Chris, why don't you start us off and tell us what you thought about this episode? Because I'm not sure if Jason is frozen or just making a weird face. Oh, he's
gone again. Oh, no.
He's gone. He's vanished.
You spoke his name and he disappeared.
Happy to talk about this one. Yeah, very much love this filmmaker. We kind of talked about it before the episode. Roxanne Benjamin, who made this, is an old friend of mine and kept me sane at a job that I had in downtown Nashville at a place called the Documentary Channel. And it was just such a strange startup. Like, our boss would get pornography and like illegally purchased Viagra, like sent to our office pretending that it was screeners. So like we'd have to like deal with that and like send it downstairs. So it was like, I really felt like the only other quasi sane person in the place. And like, we kind of had our little floor of the building and like, just kind of kept each other sane in that gig. And I think really bonded over horror movies and music. And I still consider her to be one of the great influences of my life in terms of bands that I still love and listen to now. And I hope likewise to some extent, but just love her and have been so overjoyed to watch her career take shape. And honestly, like every chance we get, you know, we did Body of Brighton Rock, anything she makes, ooh, we're gonna if we get the opportunity to show it, just an old friend that I think the absolute world of. And getting to be a part of her, you know, beginnings as a fan of horror was very, very cool.
Jody.
Yeah, I think this is a ton of fun. You've got it. I mean, it's another one just like the first one. That lead actor has got to carry it. And Trisha Helfer, I mean, she carries it.
It's basically a one woman show. Yeah. You know, she's got that voice on the intercom and a couple of minutes of Celia not being a bone cracking dead body. So, yeah.
I mean, it's all on her the whole time. And she does a fantastic job with it. Jason is back again. This time looking like a grandpa with his phone camera.
The many resurrections of Jason.
But yeah, no, I really enjoyed this segment.
Is this part six where Jason's a zombie? Or is it
I was going to say Jason Lives.
My personal favorite of the franchise, so I'm good with it.
Me too. Yeah.
So much fun.
But yeah, I really like this one a lot. It's, again, it's that classic, you know, Tales from the Crypt Creepshow formula, where at first I felt like maybe she didn't deserve this. You know, she's just a CS, she happens to be rich and she didn't pick the right person for the job. But then she has a little mini explosion at some point along the way where she starts telling her dead girlfriend why she didn't choose her. And it's, you will never be me. You know, I am the one. And that is the moment that she flipped over into Tales from the Crypt bad guy status.
You bring up the point that as I was watching it, I was also reminded of a movie that I really love, which is Danny Boyle's Shallow Grave. Mm. And
oh, yeah.
To me, one of the scariest things about that movie early on is when people that we think are on the right side of you know, the moral equation are deciding whether or not they do want to get rid of this body and how disgusting and disturbing it is to them, but then how that slowly corrupts them and what we start to learn about them. And I thought, like, man, as a kind of bottle episode stuck in an elevator, we kind of did this here tonight. And I'm also a sucker for, like, a single location. Yeah. Like, if it's an episode of Cheers where it's like, damn, Norm locked us in the basement, I'm like, well, this is going to be delightful. So, you know, love that kind of thing.
Amando, what do you think about it?
Well, hold on a second. Jason, are you here?
I think so. Am I here?
Yeah, your sound is terrible, but it's fine.
Is this real life?
We'll roll with it. Your video quality is phenomenal, but your
great foundational shot. It's beautiful.
Yeah, so we're gonna do a contest. If you can count, if you can guess how many nostril hairs that Jason has, we'll send you a sticker.
You gotta pay shipping though.
Yeah, no, I'm like self-conscious about it.
We really can't see your nostril hair for the record. We can't.
Okay, good. No, this felt, obviously, it was written by John Harrison, who wrote many Tales in the Crypt episodes. It just felt straight Tales in the Crypt, and I really kind of appreciate that. Like, people keep talking about, like, what would Tales in the Crypt look like now? This is, I think, pretty much a good example of that.
This whole episode, both segments are Tales from the Crypt segments. Like, they just aren't.
It feels like it.
And Jody and Chris already brought it up, but anytime you have, like you mentioned, Chris, that small set with just two actors, that's straight Tales from the Crypt. Like, but I want to say cutting corners in the budget, but being able to still produce a high quality episode with maybe not a whole lot of money.
Economical.
I also love that moment in the first segment with the Scarecrow, where we definitely get like the Billy, that, or not Billy, but the good kid making eye contact with the creep outside the window. Ooh. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, like they're like, yeah, I forgot about that. So, really love that.
Well, isn't the name of the kid in the Crypt Show movie Harold?
Yeah,
it is, and it's Joe Hill. So it's Stephen King's son. So yeah, that's awesome.
No, I wasn't there when you guys talked about, but the fact that they actually show him a Girl Scout getting murdered.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, I haven't seen that.
I appreciate something that's willing to go for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's still, I mean, to this day, it's still kind of shocking when you see a movie when they go all, when they show a kid dying. Mm-hmm. It's still.
I've been redoing the Omen movies. Yeah. Since the first Omen came out, and there is a great deal of child death in Orphan 2 or excuse me in Omen 2, and like there is a child death montage in Omen 3. So
I will go to bat for Omen 3 with Sam.
I enjoy Omen 3 100%.
This is why you're like my favorite person right now. A lot of people pan Omen 3, but Sam Neill is just awesome in that.
It's, and he beautifully shot. The score is great. He's great. It does this to me. All the Omen movies do this, but 3 really does this. Like, it'll be really elegant and charming, and then it'll do the trashiest fucking shit ever. And I love that about it.
I love that combo. So.
Omen 4, I can't really defend that one, but
yeah, it's made for TV, is showing from frame one, but yeah,
definitely.
It's no Birds 2 Land's End. The other.
Are there any final thoughts on these two segments?
I just think it's a really solid episode. I know I've had chaos kept me out the last couple weeks, but I saw the first one and I saw this one. So as far as I'm concerned, this show's perfect.
Well, and even though it's been solid.
Yeah, no, the other episodes are solid. I just feel like this is one of the best ones from my first watch through. I remember this one and thinking it's great.
Researching this tonight with y'all, I came across so many people saying that these were their favorite two in the season. And very much because they evoked all of those Tales from the Crypt and classic EC feelings that we were talking about earlier.
100%.
Jason, do you want to take back over?
You want me to? You seem to be doing a great job without me.
All right. So let's go ahead and give our episode ratings. We rate on a scale of 5, and you can give half points. And we'll do a rating for each segment. And Chris is our guest. We'll start with you.
Man, this is one where, again, there's a lot of personal bias because of my relationships with these filmmakers.
Nothing
but these are two incredibly fun stories, well told, and also my deep abiding love for the work of Joe Lansdale, definitely gonna take some. But I think this is a 5-star one. This is a 5 for me. Yeah.
Jody.
Both segments for that matter.
Sorry. Jody.
Yeah, I'm right on the same track. This is 5 out of 5. Both of them are fantastic. I want to watch them again. Like that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you get a short film that you just can't wait to rewatch. I think last year during CFF, I watched the one with the little gnomes like 10 times.
Oh, I love that. That's so good.
So it's the same thing. I just can't wait to jump back into it. So yeah, 5 out of 5. Easy.
Jason, what'd you think?
I miss, like I said, I miss the discussions. I haven't had a chance to think about it as deeply as you guys have, but yeah, I'll go with the 5 out of 5. They're both very, very good. I love the effects in the first one, the Stephen King vibe, and the second one was just pure Tales from the Crypt throwback to me. So I loved it.
And we're going hive mind because I'm also doing 5 out of 5 on these because I thought they were both super fun episodes. Again, give me 20 minutes of a fun episode that like I'm never looking at the clock. I'm never wondering when is this over and I'm having a great time the whole time. Then when it's over, I'm kind of like, oh, I could use a little bit more. Like I want some more of these characters. It's always a good time. So I was a big fan of these. So I'll watch it, people. This is a great, great series and a great episode.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, Jason. Give us our song of the day.
Switching everybody's rules today.
Love It in the Elevator by Aerosmith. Does that work for you?
All right, fuck off. I'm giving the song of the day.
I was like, what
do I song by the 13th floor elevators? Yeah.
Mondo doesn't let us pick anymore. We've done it before.
Well, I can let you guys pick, but the problem is Aerosmith is terrible. And the fact that fucking Steven Tyler decide to cast his daughter in a sexually explicit music video, kind of weird. Just saying.
Content from his own memoir keeps just getting republished. And it's like, dude, the evidence in your trial is shit you wrote. And then an editor edited and still got put in the fucking book. So, okay.
Multiple people looked at this shit and said, print it. He didn't, you know, he was on either Joe Rogan or Howard Stern and didn't know that he wrote Dream On or he's singing Dream On.
Oh, really? Jeez. We had Penelope Spheeris come in for a Decline of the Western Civilization part one and two screening a couple years ago. And she told this story about Aerosmith's management coming in. So Steven and Joe that are in the movie, they had to search every inch of that room to make sure she hadn't like hidden drugs for them somewhere. They like cut up couch cushions and shit. So
that's good. That's crazy. Jason, if you have a better one than Aerosmith, I'm all ears, but.
I couldn't think of anything Scarecrow or Elevator related other than those two.
Alrighty, I'm just going to go ahead and use a band. It's my third time I've used this artist because he's got a new album out. He's one of my favorite artists of all time, Migo the Devil.
Mm-hmm.
Super like dark folk Americana with in his new record, it sounds like he's channeling Tom Waits. So, because when you see the last scene of that first the first segment of this, and the roots are coming to get the roots are kind of strangling the guy, I'm going to go with the song Hanging by the Roots, which is just a fantastic, like the whole new record is just fantastic. But if anybody other is a fan of Tom Waits or a fan of that Americana style, I highly recommend Amigo the Devil. So, Amigo the Devil. Hanging by the Roots from the album Yours Until the War is Over. Great record. I'm waiting for Jason to jump in.
Yeah, I don't know who's supposed to take over this bunch. I just jumped in.
All right, Jody, you got some horror news for us?
I do have horror news for you. The first one, I'm skipping my order. I normally talk about releases, but I have to talk about this one first because we just got a trailer for Maxine today.
Yes.
And it looks fucking so bad. Oh, this movie looks so good.
And the trailer didn't give away
anything. No, didn't give away like, anything. I feel like it just gives away a vibe.
Yeah. It's cool when you can watch a trailer and think, where are they going with this? What are they going to do? And I'm super excited.
No, the only thing the trailer really gives away is this incredible cast that they have in this one. We find out and that you've got Kevin Bacon, Giancarlo Esposito with like a wave going on, this crazy hair.
It's so good.
Man, Bobby Cannavale,
like the show on the Universal backlot.
Yeah, with the Psycho.
It was really cool.
Psycho
using backlot. The Psycho house, like yeah. And then there's a shot where she looks at the Bates house and you see an old woman that's supposed to be like old girl. Oh, love it! It looks like there's gonna be like one of those movies to be a lot of like little flashbacks or like, psychological images. It just looks very cool, very different, which we like.
So both and X and Pearl have been some of my favorite movies of the year they've came out.
So great.
And just from this trailer, Maxine is already it's going to be great. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm trying to think, have you ever had like a trilogy of movies by the same creative director and team that have looked so different, like stylistically?
Is the Beaver trilogy, and if you aren't aware of those, I highly recommend YouTubing it. You will not regret it.
Right now, because
the Beaver trilogy. What would you look for with that name?
just look for it on YouTube and not the open internet on Google, because I can't guarantee what you'll find there.
All right. Other news. So Maxine's the big trailer, but we also got a trailer today for season 4. This is just for me. I don't know if anyone else cares. Evil? Season 4.
Yes. Looks so good. One of the great horror shows on television. So good. Absolutely
this series amazing. So much. It is some of the best horror on TV right now. It's on Paramount Plus. I think that's the only place it's streaming. So definitely, if you want to pay $5 and watch the whole series, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. It's so good.
It's some of the best demon effects and practical effects from episode to episode that I've seen in any horror series in a while. It's got this
really cool tonal balance, too, where some parts are
it's hilarious and dark. Yeah.
And then you see a scene where there's a meeting between a goat man and, like, a nerdy office guy. And it's so ridiculous and hilarious.
Also, talk about something that did elevator horror very well. Yeah, that the elevator game episode. Terrifying, yeah.
So what's the elevator pitch on the show? Is it anthology?
It's kind of anthology-ish. It's a group of people who investigate paranormal things because the Catholic Church has commissioned them to do it. So, like, one of them is a non-believer, one of them is a psychologist, and one is a priest. And so you got a believer, a non-believer, and somebody who wants nothing to do with any of it.
But more interesting is that the priest himself seems like he's starting to lose his connection to God, and early in the series begins taking psychedelics to try to facilitate visions, and everything that comes from that is just fucking nuts. You've also got like Christine Lotti and like a great, like just the incredible character actor doing some very terrifying stuff here. I can't remember the name of the actor from Lost, but who was like one of the heavies in Lost is the kind of incel demon training guy in this. And it's just such a cool show. Great ensemble cast.
I feel like this is one of those shows that horror fans don't really know about, but they definitely no one knows about it.
It's going to be a hit. This and Channel Zero are things that I've tried to put in the hands of everybody that was listening to me.
For all your love of Alex de Iglesias and like religious horror, you would love
very much here too, man.
So let me say, I did watch the first episode, and it was very heavy-handed with the religion.
Give it a little bit more. Let it get into it.
And that's what I'm about to ask. Like, I think it sounds like what you guys said. They taper that off a little bit.
It balances it completely. Yeah. Definitely, it has to find its footing, but when it does, it really finds it.
Yeah, I definitely want to see it, because if it's anything like 30 Coins, like, you know how much I love
30 Coins. I loved 30 Coins, man. There's some dope monster action on that. That show goes for broke, man.
And the fact they brought in Paul Giamatti, who's like my favorite actor.
Completely made it work, too. Like, such a great character.
It was so awesome.
All right, we got more releases to talk about. So much cool stuff coming out. April 15th and then 19th again. The movie, appropriate for what we were talking about a minute ago, Hundreds of Beavers is finally coming out in some form. This is a movie you might not have heard of. It's not even a horror movie.
They just played it down here at the Beverly Theater here in Las Vegas.
I want to see this movie so bad.
But it looks ridiculous, and I'm for it.
It's like it's a live-action Looney Tunes with all these people in beaver costumes. It looks incredible. Chris, have you? I'm sure in your film watching stuff, you got a chance.
I saw it, and I came very close to programming it, and I'll tell you why I didn't when we stopped recording.
Okay. I'm just saying this. It just looks silly and ridiculous, and I like
it's absolutely well made. It feels like a Tex Avery cartoon come to life. Like, there are so many vibes in it that are definitely worth a watch for sure.
All right, more stuff. Another release that's coming very soon, and probably one of my most anticipated of the year outside of Maxine, is Abigail is coming out on April 19th. Can't freaking wait for this.
Starting to see early reactions from people I really trust just saying that you aren't ready for how this movie goes for fucking broke. And such a great cast. You saw it? That's awesome.
I read someone who was talking about how people were complaining this trailer showed too much. But it really didn't. Like, when you actually watch the movie, it does not show too much.
I think the trailer basically introduces the concept, and there's going to be a lot of craziness that happens that we aren't prepared for.
I don't think Jason says I'm right. Jason, Yeah, Jason did see it at an advanced screening. He just can't talk
about
it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so Abigail's coming out soon. If you're impatient, a new second trailer just came out and a featurette about how much blood they used on set. I'm not watching either of them because I don't want to spoil anything else at this point. I'm 100% in. I don't need anything else.
I'll say this. Meg Navarro at Bloody Disgusting always does a great job on managing her spoilers. And she did a set visit that you'd probably be pretty safe to read. That's really charming and fun. But yeah, definitely some spoilers out there too.
More stuff coming out. This is another one I can't wait for. Late Night with the Devil's finally coming to Shudder. I never got
so happy to watch it again, like 12 times. Yeah, it's such a fun movie. WNUF Halloween special is a thing, like along with Ghostwatch, that every Halloween comes on at my house at some point or another. I have to put it in rotation. Yeah. And I think Late Night's going to be one of those too.
I can't wait for this movie. Unfortunately, it's one of those small releases that didn't come to my nothing little theater that I have out here in the middle of nowhere. But it will be on Shudder for everybody. And just a little bit.
Yeah, April 19th. Yeah.
Coming up quick.
Dude, you're in for a treat, man. That's right now. It's my favorite movie of the year.
I am one of the biggest WNUF fans. So I love this kind of thing.
Love it so much. Like, I got to say, Infested, that's coming out not long after it on the 26th, is also like such a fucking, if you're even remotely arachnophobic, do not even fucking attempt this motion picture. But when you do watch it, you will understand why this person has been tapped to do the next chapter in the Evil Dead. It's wild.
I saw when they talked about it in Fangoria, how the tagline was 75% of the spiders, real spiders. I'm like, fuck that.
Yes, they are.
I respect it, but I'll let you guys tell me how it is.
Speaking of, while I'm talking about releases, Sting is coming to theaters on April 12th. Another spider movie for Mondo not to watch. Trying to see what else we got. Civil War comes to theater on April 12th. What I'm excited about. I've heard
playing IMAX here. Yeah. Strangely, can't believe that. Never seen an Alex Garland movie on IMAX. Got to do that.
And then outside of releases, a old movie coming back. We've got The Mummy coming back to theaters. The 1999 Brendan Fraser movie coming back to theaters. I would love.
I saw it in the theater in 99. It
sounds like a fun time.
Yeah.
April 26th. By the time you guys listen to this, probably the last day for it, but Dawn of the Dead is re-releasing in a lot of theaters for the 45th anniversary.
Nice. So I know the folks at Salem Horror Fest have doing that, and along with some other programming that benefits the Romero Foundation. So I think there'll be a really cool screening of it out there.
The last piece of news. I am a figure collector. My office is covered in little plastic people. But I could have a big plastic person if I want, because NECA has just released a life-size Megan doll. Life-size. I thought it was, they released it on April 1st. I 100% thought it was an April Fool's joke. It's not. Same. It exists. It's real. You can buy it. It's about $500. I'm not going to buy it for multiple reasons. One is, I feel like if you buy a life-size child doll, you get put on a list somewhere, which is fine. I don't need it.
Say, that was my, you're like, oh, good. Who's this for?
Yeah, that don't want to need this. So,
because it came out on April 1st, I put it in my. I wanted to see if it was what would happen if I put it in my cart.
No, okay, sure.
And now it's been sitting in my cart.
I must just be fucking honest here.
Is NECA just sending you like daily, like you left something in your cart, buddy? Reminders. Yeah.
And now I'm just kind of like egging them on, like just to see how long I can leave it in my cart for.
Meanwhile, someone at NECA is calling the police. Like,
we got one. It's this guy in California. Yeah. Go check him out.
I just want a burglar to break into Jason's house and to be met with an army of Megans.
Turns out they'll let you buy as many as you want. You know,
I mean, I did buy a Wednesday figure, but that was for my daughter.
I mean, if they released a 5-inch tall Megan figure, it would be on my shelf today. But I don't need a lifetime.
I got high, went to a Walmart a couple nights ago and emerged with every X-Men 97 piece of fucking like merchandise that was on the. I was like, man, it's still, it feels like it's, I don't know.
Hold on, they have X-Men 97 toys?
They do. They're their little like G.I. Joe 4-inch things, and they're really fucking cool.
For anyone that hasn't watched, X-Men 97 is fucking amazing.
truly loved it so far. Yeah, it is too. Very I much am, for me.
I'm yeah. watching through the original series with my kids.
Same thing first, and you will absolutely be rewarded for your time for doing
it. So episode 3, I was high as fuck when I watched it. And afterwards, I'm like, well, I have to watch this again when I'm not high because I'm
100%.
It was amazing, so good. I had no idea what happened.
Nice. But you have so much good stuff coming out. 2024 is looking like a stacked year for horror. So, yeah. Keep checking new stuff out.
All right, Jason, can you watch movies about snakes?
What?
Can you watch movies about snakes?
To some degree. Okay. I don't care about it's the little ones that actually worry me more than big ones.
The little ones around here are like heartless, man. Like,
you'd be, yeah. So he'd be fine.
It's really psychological. It's some edifice. You see this thing.
So like Anaconda, Blood Orchid. Totally fine.
Oh yeah, I love Anaconda. I fucking love that movie.
Same, man.
It's more about a lot of small snakes like tangled together that like freaks my brain out.
I get that.
I will let you know. As a Tennessean, I have never seen more than one snake at a time. They tend to be kind of solitary, so you know you can avoid them pretty easily. I occasionally will find some little tiny, like teensy, like this long little green snake. I'll pick it up. I'm not afraid of it. There's only like 3 poisonous snakes in Tennessee. You're fine. Come on down.
It's not poisonous. I don't think they're going to hurt me. It's just something deep in my brain freaks out.
Totally fair. All right, I don't have any more news. That's all I got. Lots of cool releases coming up.
We're going to take a quick dip into the Patreon pits with our weekly Would You Rather question. Would you rather have a cat with a human face or a dog with human hands instead of
paws? I got this. This is an easy answer. A dog with human hands, because dogs are man's best friend, the nicest creatures ever. They'd probably do nice things to you. They'd be like, oh, I'll go fucking make dinner. It's cool. I'll take the trash out. I got this. Whereas a cat with a human face would just fucking stare at you for hours on end. It'd be the most uncomfortable thing in the entire world. Fuck that.
I have grown up with cats. We have cats. I am one of the cat people out there. I don't want a cat looking at me like that. I don't want a cat with intelligence looking at my face.
The other day I came home from work and our window was open and our cat sits in the window. And I realized that our house smelled like an open fucking sewer. And when I followed the smell all the way to my cat, I realized that she was farting and that the wind was just blowing it in the window. And if she had a human face while that happened, it might set us back. Yeah, can't have that.
I'm contrarian only because you know my dog sleeps in the bed with me and my wife. And sometimes it sleeps like up by my head, and I'm just freaked out that like at some point I'm gonna be like holding my dog's hand thinking it's my wife or something like that. Really weird. What's
wrong with that? Yeah. That's adorable. Like
no, that kind of freaks me out.
It's amazing.
And actually, our Patreons agree with me pretty much 2-1. Say cat with a human face.
Really?
A dog with human hands. Yeah.
We're gonna need some new Patreon followers.
The thing with claws versus the thing with love.
I mean, if you had a dog with human hands, it could shake like really well when you did the little like tricks with it.
Dude, he could let them out. They could let themselves outside.
Yeah, they can open doors. This is awesome.
Fucking amazing. I don't see any negative in this situation except the fact that you
have anything to make a cat more like a velociraptor. I don't know. Seems like the same sort of hubris that got us in that Jurassic Park problem in the first place. So,
I love my cats, but I know at least once or twice a day they just look at me and just say "fuck you," just angry for no reason.
So, can these cats with human faces grow facial hair?
Cat with a beard.
Somehow a cat with just a mustache is even way more terrifying.
This cat just cat like with Scott Ian from Anthrax's little thing. Like fucking terrifying.
Or the Lemmy mutton chops.
Yeah.
Dude, Jason, you could rock some mutton chops, by the way. Just shave all this shit off in the
middle. I did that in high school. I'm
not really joking. Cool. I think it looked really cool, actually.
All right, and then to wrap up our episode, we do our dad advice. So, Chris, you're our guest. What advice would you like to give our audience, maybe about how to run a film festival or how to, you know, curate a program?
Or just, you know, general life advice.
Yeah.
I can't remember who said, you know, find something that you love more than anything and let it fucking kill you. But I feel like that's worked out really great for me so far, at least until Red Lobster called me back about that big mate or deep position. It's honestly like it's the silliest, most commonsensical thing ever, but I have hated every job I've ever had and found so much depression in not getting to share and do what I love. And the moment that road felt different was when I started on CFF. So even though it's a lot of work, I couldn't see myself doing anything different. And if you have any weird personality trait that makes that sound like something you want to do, you got to fucking do it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's cool. Follow all right. Well, to wrap us up, why don't you just plug CFF one more time, tell people where to find you, what the dates are, et cetera, et cetera.
I really appreciate that. So our dates are June 21st through 28th. The 21st through 28th is all virtual. Even if you're not in Chattanooga or in the Southeast, you can tune in to over 43 films, over 80 short films, a nightly secret screening we call the Red Eye. And boy, did we fucking bring our A game this year. Ooh. I am so proud. Like last year, we didn't expect that to be the bell of the ball. And some of those movies got just watched high to hell. So we got to bring it this year. We're at chatfilmfest.org. That's just CHATT. And our whole rest of our lineup launches coming right up on April 16th. So there is literally a full film festival's worth of stuff and even just this wave that we're putting out. So we're pretty happy about it.
So that will be either the day or the day after this episode comes out. So go check the day after. Yeah.
That's awesome. That times out beautiful.
Monday the 15th. So if you're listening to it live, the day it comes out, go check their website the day after. See the big announcements.
Appreciate it.
Support independent. Okay. Well, support the hard work next, that goes into this. It's worth every penny.
Yeah. Well, next week we're going to continue our Creep Show reviews with Night of the Paw and Time is Tough in the Musky Holler. We appreciate everyone for listening. We would really appreciate it if you give us a rating review on iTunes, rating on Spotify. Check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And check us out on TikTok at Dads from the Crypt Talk. With that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt. And I love how much Mondo giggles at that TikTok name every
week. It makes me smile every time I hear it.
Man, if Jason hadn't been here for the ending of this show, I would have just had to, or Mondo and I would just had to be like, okay, that's it.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you ask for. You may get it. Ha 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 ha.